welcome back to Horizons. Peter Stewart, welcome to Horizons.
Thank you very much.
Can you tell me what your title is?
Dr. Peter Stewart. But I'd like my students to know me as Peter, because I like to, I often say to my students, they're not just my students, they're my colleagues. So I like to engage in different conversation and learn from them as well.
Very good. So what do you teach?
Yeah, so I teach in MTU mainly on the veterinary bioscience programs and on the wildlife programs. But I teach as well, we have a springboard course on sustainable agriculture. So I teach on something called One Health on that. So listeners might be familiar with One Health, but it's the concept that human health, animal health and environmental health are all closely linked. So we need better collaboration between people working those disciplines to improve overall health. So maybe in the past, people think you're a doctor, you just look at people. If you're looking a veterinarian, you just look at animals. If you're, say, ecologist, you look at environment. But we know now diseases move between animals and people, move between an environment. If the environment is damaged, people can get sick or through pollution and so on. So we need better working together. So that's kind of something I'm very interested in. I teach them that as well.
Oh, it's fascinating, because here in the diocese, September for us was the season of creation. So that's about biodiversity, nature, how things came into being. There's a scheme within the individual parishes to try and return more of the parish grounds to biodiversity, less lawns, more wildflowers. So this is very much in your area of study.
Yeah, it would be. Yeah, so even if you just think of a lecture I was given yesterday, it's on a disease called toxoplasmosis. Some people might have heard, if you saw the film Trainspotting, not a spoiler, but one of the characters dies from toxoplasmosis. So it can affect people. It's the reason people are told when they're pregnant not to change the cat litter, because it can, normally doesn't cause much problems with people, but if you are pregnant, it can cause problems. If you're a sheep farmer, you might know it as a disease of sheep. And the reason we're talking about it in One Health context, in my lecture, we were talking about in California, they had a problem with sea otters. And what happens is the eggs that cause infection are shed by cats, and people were flushing their cat litter down the toilet, was going out in the bay and infecting the sea otters. But of course, anybody who was swimming possibly could have got infected as well. So by encouraging people not to flush their stuff in the toilet, they were improving the health of the bay, improving the health of the people, and stopping animals infected. So
wow.
Again, it's just better communication. So you can imagine, if you're trying to solve that problem, it makes more sense to have all the people involved come together and work out a solution, trying to win-win solution to these problems.
That's amazing. I can't even comprehend how someone studying otters in a bay would figure out that residential cat litter was the cause.
Yeah, that's pretty great person working over there in UC Davis.
That's amazing. So I understand you have a new project.
Yeah, so we have a Science Foundation Ireland Discover project. So that's really about engaging people in science, and especially people who mightn't engage in science so much before. So we do run events all the time to encourage people to engage in science. But sometimes you get the same people coming to them all the time. So they're kind of preaching to converted, kind of, as opposed to finding people who might not. Or also, of course, we do a lot of great work with schools, but this is more looking at people who mightn't see science for them and look at ways to talk about science and communicate science. So we actually grew from a project we had during COVID. It was called Refocus. So it was reimagining the future One Health, which I mentioned, COVID and us. So it was going to communities that traditionally wouldn't have as much access or much engagement in science in inner city Dublin. So people in Ballyrogan, like, we know, talking to communities. Some of the schools our kids would have gone to wouldn't even have much science facilities. If they wanted to study science, they had to go to a different school and find a different way of doing it. People who wouldn't engage in science so much. So we talked to them people, said what were they interested, what did they want to know more about COVID, what were they finding confusing. And then we got experts. The product worked really, really well. Because everything was online, we didn't anticipate it all be online. We didn't think COVID would last so long. But we got really good access to people. So we had Mike Ryan, you might remember, he's the World Health Organization, a man from Sligo, actually, who was in charge of the emergency response to COVID. So we got access to him. He was happy to come talk to people. And I think that was the response that we got was, well, we never thought he'd come and talk to us. And from that, talking to the communities, we said, what would you like to do next? And they said they're interested in more about environmental problems and food and how they all tie in together. So we thought it made sense, not just looked at it from an urban perspective, but also rural. We're down here in Kerry, so we thought it'd be good. Because sometimes, especially when you're talking about environment, there can be kind of us versus them mentality. Everyone's blaming somebody else. Oh, it's all the farmers, or it's all people flying, or it's people in the country. But if you want to have a solution, you need a community approach. So our idea was trying to get, so working with colleagues in UCD, as well as MTU Kerry, and to come together and talk to different communities, see what they want to do, and hopefully bring them together. And one of the things they said was, we were talking to the ICA what would they be interested in? And one woman said, I'm in my late 60s. I've never had the opportunity when I was younger to go into a lab. I'd love to see what you do when you run these labs. And even better, if I could take my grandchildren. So we thought this is an amazing idea. So we ran one of those events in June where we asked people to come along, bring the grandchildren, or not just grandchildren, no, any. Somebody from a different generation was encouraged. So it could be a neighbor or a friend. And the feedback was, oh, this was great. It was actually much better than I thought it would be. I didn't know what we were going to do, so I was a bit intimidated, but run this again. And I'd like to tell more people to come because I didn't want to tell them because I didn't know if it was good or not.
Excellent. What's the ICA?
Sorry, it's the Irish Countrywomen's Association.
Countrywomen's Association.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
It's my first time hearing about them. So, Peter, you did your PhD in parasitology. For anyone listening who doesn't know, can you tell me what is a parasite?
Yeah, it's a great question. So parasite, the way I define it is it's an animal or an organism that lives on another organism of a different species. It either lives in or on the animal and it usually causes it harm.
Okay.
Yeah.
The most common parasites we'd hear about are ticks.
And worms, especially in kids. People are always surprised. Pinworm, you often hear if a kid is scratching himself, you might say, do you have worms or something? Maybe it does. Pinworms, some people say they're barely a parasite. They don't cause much harm. They do cause itching. And that's to do, I won't go too much detail, but to do where they lay their eggs. You can use your imagination.
And I suppose head lice as well,
yeah,
and fleas,
yeah, yeah,
things like that would also be parasites.
Yeah, and worms, you're told to worm your dog regularly, and that would be a reason why. Liver fluke in cattle would be a big problem for people out there, farmers in the area as well. Yep.
Are there any other well-known parasites that farmers would be dealing with?
Yeah, there would be. Liver fluke would be a big one. Babesiosis would be a problem. So lungworm, coop would be another one. Yeah, lots of different ones.
And the things you have on display down the microscopes in the labs, would it be just ticks or would you have some of these other parasites on display?
Yeah, no, we have lots of different parasites. One thing my students enjoy, we have a collection of zoonotic parasites. So they're parasites that they can move from people to animals and vice versa. We have collections from them from all over the world. So some are found in Ireland. So liver fluke, actually, we know it as a cattle infection. Doesn't really infect people so much. But in countries where they eat a lot of like wild watercress, they tend to get infected more. So it can infect people as well. So that's one of the ones we use. But Ascaris, it's not so much a problem here, but it infects a billion people worldwide.
Wow.
Tends to be with parasites. It's the poorest people in the country tend to get it. So that tends to be in Africa, you get cases of Ascaris that it's easily treated, which is kind of disappointing because it should be a case you're easy to treat these people. But the problem is if you treat the people, it comes back again and again. So you have to intervene constantly.
I think the most horrifying story I read recently about parasites was about the people who cooked bear meat in the woods. And I think there was 8 of them and 6 of them ate the bear meat. 2 of them were vegetarians,
okay,
who just ate vegetables that were improperly prepared next to the bear meat, and all 8 of them got brain worm parasites.
Okay, yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah, the brain worm, yeah. When you said bear meat, I thought of trichinella. So trichinella is a parasite that grows in your muscles, and there has been cases associated with bears. There's a type of trichinella can survive in the north, in the Arctic. So these Arctic explorers were found, unfortunately, deceased, because they ran out of food and they shot a bear, and obviously they didn't have the facility to cook it properly and they got infected with trichinella. So that would have been my guess.
Yeah.
But then the brain parasite,
I'm guessing,
sure.
You would be more correct than me. Maybe it was just a different parasite that ended up in the brain. Yeah. But I think the main lesson from that one is to not cook a bear in the woods if you don't have your meat thermometer handy.
Yeah, exactly.
They decided to wing it and they ended up in international medical news journals.
Okay, yeah, I remember being at a conference and people talking about different things, and a more senior member stood up and said, a take-home message, if you want to avoid parasites, it's don't eat meat, be antisocial, and don't travel. That's what you can do.
On Horizons here, I think our listenership might skew a bit older. My own mother, for example, she remembers when electricity came into effect.
Okay. Yeah.
And also when my fridge broke, she was like, oh yeah, we got on fine without them, but it would be very hard to go back to not having a fridge. So people of my mother's generation would never have stepped inside a laboratory because, you know, there wasn't electricity, or even if there was, it would have been the most basic of machines. So I imagine what you have now would be fascinating for people of an older generation.
Yeah, they found it very interesting. Some of them said, yeah, if you had told me I was going to look down a microscope, I would have come straight away because I've never looked in a microscope before, and it's great to see what it has.
Yeah.
But then, like you said, you learn a lot as well by just talking to them, because I did a lab looking at ticks. I'm interested in parasitology, showing the different stages in the life cycle of a tick, how it gets bigger and how we identify different species. And a few women came to me afterwards and said, I find that really interesting, but ticks were everywhere when I was younger. I remember, I don't know how we all didn't have Lyme disease, because we used to come home every day from the fields covered in ticks. But it's good to have that knowledge, and even to say, okay, where were the fields? Go back and see, maybe the ticks are they still there? There's a lot of knowledge out there that can be untapped.
I heard about, I was wondering if you could tell me, how you gathered the ticks for the day.
Yeah. Well, I should stress, so that the ticks on the day, they're all dead, so there was no risk of anyone getting infected or anything. But yeah, it's quite simple. If you think the way a tick works is that it wants to find a host. Like most animals, what want to do is pass on their genes to the next generation. So just tick grabs onto its host and climbs up it and feeds off, drinks blood. So what we do is we just get a sheet, preferably an old sheet, the old bobbly sheets that you might have in the back of the press that you wouldn't dream putting on the beds if you had a guest coming over, are ideal, because the more bobbles are, the more easy it is for a tick to grab on. So you just cut your white sheet into a square and you just drag it along the forest floor or the field, wherever you're looking for. Tick will think it's an animal, will grab onto it, hold onto it, and then you just lay it out flat and come along, carefully look, and have a fine forceps. We tend to call them watchmaker's forceps. You don't want to damage the tick. You can just take them off then and put them in. Well, if you're say doing some work, you can put them in a test tube or for testing later.
So imagine you have a lot of ticks on purpose on the sheet. Do you have many ticks by accident on yourself?
Yeah, kind of pet peeve of mine is people say, oh, you're working with ticks, it's going to be a big risk of your students getting ticks. But I think because we're looking for ticks, we're more aware how to protect ourselves from ticks. So what you tend to do, if you're in an area and over there's lots of ticks, you can spray yourself with the jungle formula. It's got DEET in it, so you can just get an any chemist, put it in there. Also, try and wear bright clothing, because ticks will stand out on that. Keep your skin covered, because what a tick will do is it will climb onto an animal or a person, doesn't immediately feed, it finds a nice place to feed. So maybe crawling along for a while before it starts to feed. So the sooner you can find the tick, the better. So if you are in an area where you think you might have got a tick in yourself, just search yourself as soon as possible, or ask somebody else to search for you, have a shower, take yourself off and remove any ticks as soon as possible. Yeah.
That's fantastic. It's a great finisher to the season of creation, that for these events you're running, I'm not an MTU, I could come, but any listeners who are listening who want to come along, they could just come and look down a microscope and see these fantastic wonders.
Yeah, that's the idea. And especially we're encouraging people to bring another person along. So if you are of interest, maybe there's somebody who's not so interested that might just need a bit of persuading there, especially the people who are looking for, people who don't really think, okay, that's not so much for me, or think it's science for it is for everybody. And especially want to hear from people who don't think it is, and then we can learn why and maybe do science a bit better.
It sounds like a great day out. So you're going to be doing more events in the future, you think?
Yeah, we have. So the buzzword out there, it's called engaged research. So I suppose of us in our ivory tower in MTU saying these are events we should run, we go to the communities and say, what would you want us to run? So the feedback we've got is there an event on water quality. So, you know, everyone in Tralee and Kerry are in the sea a lot, and you often see the beaches closed. We don't understand, why is it closed? Is it really safe when it opens? So we're getting something to talk on that. The other event was around, food. You hear a lot of things, this food cures this food, eat this food if you don't want this. So just talking about that and misinformation, how do you know what's true and not? So two events, and then we'll have a capstone event at the end where we try to bring everyone together. We had a nice idea, somebody suggested, because we have these two communities, one in Dublin, one in Kerry, and want to bring them together. People don't have time. We were originally going to bus everyone together, but people are so busy that they can't really take a day out. So this person had this idea of postcards for the future. So the idea is you write a postcard to yourself. So we're asking people to write down what they think about biodiversity and climate change. A letter to himself, say in 20 years that they can come back. So we're working with that. So at the final event, our whole team will be around that, kind of concerns people have and what they might do towards the future on that.
That sounds lovely. Where can people go, Peter, to find out more details?
Yeah, so we're on all the usual social media. We have a website as well. So it's a bit complicated. It's refreshscience.squarespace.com. You can also find us on Facebook, on Instagram and Twitter.
Dr. Peter Stewart of MTU, thank you very much for speaking to me.
Well, thanks very much. Really enjoyed it. Thanks very much, David.
Thank you very much for listening to Horizons. Feel free to contact me on davidsheehan@dioceseofkerry.ie, or if you're feeling very fancy, send me a WhatsApp voice note and maybe I'll play it on the show. No promises though. My new number is on the contact page of the Dyson website. Thank you to the production team, in particular Grania Quirk. Just a Thought for the Coming Week is by Declan Crowley. Until this time next Sunday, I hope you have a wonderful week.